This is the time and place set for the hearing on United States versus Witt. Today we're hearing arguments on the two specified issues. The appellant will go first, then the government, followed by appellant's rebuttal. Are the parties ready? Okay, the appellant can proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Brian Miser. With me at council table are Majors Dan Chaney and Tom Smith, and together we represent Senior Airman Andrew Witt. In the wake of the lower court's en banc decision setting aside the death sentence in this case, the government declined to avail itself of the options provided to it by Congress and instead embarked on a campaign to delegitimize the lower court's en banc decision with the stated purpose of seeking a second de novo en banc review from a different slate of judges. Article 66 was never intended, in the words of Brigadier General Benjamin Franklin Ritter, to give the prosecution two bites at the cherry in this manner. Now, to the extent that the court is willing to entertain the government's Rule 17 and 19 argument, that those rules operate to render any en banc decision a panel decision when a judge does not participate in the en banc decision, this court need not address the two specified issues before the court, because both en banc opinions had judges who did not participate in the decisions, and according to the government's argument, they are both rendered panel decisions. And this court can vacate the second decision based upon United States versus Chilcott. But as this court's specified issues imply, the court is in fact dealing with two en banc decisions. And when the lower court issued its August 9, 2013 en banc decision, the court's jurisdiction ended, because as this court reminded the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals last term in Arness and again recently this term in Labella, the courts of criminal appeals are creatures of statute, and they possess only that authority authorized by statute and the Constitution.
Its jurisdiction ended how? Had a mandate issued?
The mandate had not issued.
Well, then had a petition been brought here?
A petition had been brought and was dismissed, Your
okay,
Honor.
Okay, then how did they not have jurisdiction?
Well, Your Honor, under the statute, only a panel decision may be reconsidered en banc. And so it is the defense's position that Article 66 ends reconsideration jurisdiction at that point. Obviously, we're aware of the Miller decision that states that, that there are not mandates, that the CCA decisions are not self-executing, but that merely meant that the time period began to run for the Judge Advocate General to seek certification if he was inclined to do so, or to comply with the court's decision in accordance with Article 66 Echo.
Why doesn't the CCA have the inherent authority as a court to en banc consider an earlier en banc decision?
Well, Your Honor, with respect to inherent authority, this court need not address the question of whether it expands its inherent authority regarding panel decisions to en banc decisions, because the government simply didn't comply with the requirements of that authority. And it dates back to the Reeves decision in 1952. And what happened in Reeves was the Navy Court, reading the statute, determined that it did not have jurisdiction to issue a reconsideration opinion when this court issued a decision in the days after that decision and without reconsideration being provided for in the statute. This court's decision in the Smith case rendered the Board of Review's decision clearly erroneous. And so this court, in resolving or holding that there was inherent authority of the panels or the board in that case, said that the court could reconsider clerical errors, inadvertently entered decisions, and decisions that were clearly erroneous. And so with that framework, that has been the framework. The government has cited in its 36A letter, the Sparks case. And so you'll see that same standard reiterated in Sparks. And in Sparks, you'll see, again, the clearly erroneous language. And the government simply did not meet that. If you look at Joint Appendix 268, which is the government's actual reconsideration motion, they say, essentially, it appears having found error that the majority of the court presumed prejudice in blind reliance upon a fanciful version of desired facts proffered by appellate defense counsel without considering the impact of countervailing evidence from the government. Those are the facts. And with respect to law, the court then combined this factual error with legal error, inverting the prejudice analysis from Strickland, finding prejudice despite the overwhelming aggravating evidence in this case in apparent reliance upon cases that are wholly distinguishable. So distinguishable cases and the factual assertions that are overlooked according to the government are essentially the government's arguments that they made to the lower court.
So it's your posture that the government in its filings referred to it as error but didn't refer to it as clearly erroneous, and that's the problem?
Well, Your Honor, I was speaking to Judge Erdman's question, the invocation of this court's inherent authority jurisprudence. And that jurisprudence requires clear error. It's not merely just submitting a pro forma reconsideration request to the CCA that results in reconsideration. And, of course, what the court was...
wouldn't it be the decision of the CCA whether clear error had occurred below or during its earlier consideration?
Well, Your Honor, certainly the CCA would have the initial pass on that, and this court could review whether they abused the discretion. And we would submit that the court clearly abused its discretion in reconsidering this case with no new facts on that assertion that the new facts are essentially that the court didn't review the government's pleadings and distinguishable cases. It does not, Your Honor.
Not frequency, but with some regularity, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
But my question, I guess the question is, and this may tie into to your point or may not, the Air Force has a rule for motions to reconsider, including a motion to reconsider an en banc decision.
Yes, right? Judge.
But it seems to me that the standards that they have for when reconsideration be granted are similar to the ones that we have, right? Which is, it's not just, so for instance, we are going to have a new judge soon, Judge Sparks.
Right.
Right. And I think that we would all agree that if we get a motion to reconsider, because they hope that since we have a new judge, that would change the vote, that would be improper, right?
Yes, I mean, Judge.
Normal standard is there has to be, some fact that was overlooked, the law has changed, there's a Scrivener's error or something like that. What is there in WIT 2, right, that meets any of those standards?
Nothing, Your Honor. And with respect to the, so the government's pleadings set forth nothing.
What about the opinion? Does it say the reason we're coming out differently is because of WIT 1, they did X, Y, or Z?
It does not, Judge, and you can find the court's order vacating the decision at Joint Appendix 338, and that offers no explanation either. And so you have the remarkable situation in this court, and the court sitting en banc with five members found unanimously that there was deficient performance in WIT 1, specifically in Judge Orr's very brief concurrence, specifically with the failure to investigate the traumatic brain injury that is at issue in this case, and they split only 3-2. On the question of whether there was a reasonable probability of a different result. And so on those facts, you would expect the government to offer something that would meet the clearly erroneous standard. You would expect the court to find what was clearly erroneous about that decision, either in its order or its decision. It does nothing. And Judge Cox, in your concurring opinion in Curtis, one of the requirements that you set forth in capital cases is that the procedures would be strictly complied with. And this is the case where it has not been complied with. And to your point, it wouldn't be permissible for the government to come in and say, you're going to get new judges, we want reconsideration on that basis. But that's essentially what the government did here. It's Joint Appendix 257. The first motion that the government files is a motion to vacate inchoate opinion, advancing the Rule 17 and 19 argument that they advanced again before this court. The reconsideration is an afterthought. It's filed a week later on September 9, 2013. That's, I think, frankly, the reason why it doesn't provide a legal basis, because what they're really after is five new judges in that.
I mean, that they disagree, but they're doing it as a placeholder in case the CCA doesn't agree with them.
Yes, Judge.
And the CCA disagree with them, where would they be?
They would be in the position where they had to seek certification with this court. And let me be more precise, in fairness, Judge Ryan. and quoting Woodbury versus Dorman, which is quoted in the papers, that, quote, there's nothing in the motion to reconsider in that case, which we conceive to be substantial or important, which is not urged and considered upon the original argument and examination of the case. But again, the primary purpose and the primary goal was getting the five new judges on the panel. And if you look at that motion at 257, the government says, the United States urges each judge on this court to fully and carefully review the entire record of trial, the briefs from both sides, and this motion, and then to return to deliberations to issue a true en banc opinion, utilizing the decades of experience, wisdom, and judgment which the Judge Advocate General of the Air Force lauded during the formal investiture ceremony of those judges on 28 August 2013. Justice has not yet been achieved, but it's not too late. That's the first motion that they file, which brings me to the second specified issue. That even if there is authority to conduct en banc review, and it would have to come from inherent authority, there's an unbroken line of cases dating back to Robertson saying that ordinarily, wherever possible, an appellant should receive review by a court of constant composition. That was reaffirmed in Wheeler at 598, that a case may not be decided by two different groups of judges within a CCA. Now, it was possible for the court in the 31 days between the government's motion for reconsideration and Chief Judge Stone's retirement to have decided the reconsideration motion. But when that did not happen, it fell to the four remaining judges to decide the government's reconsideration motion. Importantly,
They didn't, quote, unquote, recuse themselves. They said, and this is an interesting, I guess, Air Force thing, we haven't been here long enough. Fast forward, they asked for a motion for reconsideration. Two people have died, right? They're dead. So now there's only eight. Is it your position that they can't, those eight can't rehear, that they can't hear it, or that if a new judge is appointed, in the meantime, that they can't join?
It's the new judges that can't join, Judge. And so here it is the four should have proceeded. And this court in Robertson allowed. Indeed. And I think that the distinction is, as Judge Everett noted in the Fumano opinion, memorandum opinion, that the judges of this court are not similarly situated to the courts of criminal appeals. There's no tenure. You're not appointed by the Judge Advocate General. The Judge Advocate General doesn't write the rules of this court. And he can't remove the judges of this court at will. And so in accordance with Weiss and Edmund, the CCAs are courts. We don't dispute that. But they are courts that are balanced on the pinhead of due process. And if the government is going to be allowed to submit pro forma reconsideration in a system where huge chunks of the court rotate every single summer, that is too much power to invest with the court.
What's your position on the status of the five judges that said in Witt 1, we're not accusing ourselves, but we're not participating?
Judge, and we've cited numerous examples of federal circuit court judges that have done that. The judges of this court have done that. The Flowers opinion, if you go and look at the CCA decision, the en banc CCA decision, there's a judge in that case that did not participate in that decision as well. You'd be looking for.
What's your position as to having once declined to participate, then changing one's mind and diving in to participate?
Well, and we would disagree that the judges would do that. I mean, they've exercised their discretion, and they've exercised it quite commonsensically because, I mean, you've seen the joint appendix in this case. It's 4,000 pages. The case had been pending for 7 years at the CCA. And who would become Chief Judge Helge after the Judge Advocate General inserted him into the reconsideration declined to participate because he arrives on June 17, 2013, and apparently doesn't believe that that is sufficient time to participate meaningfully in this capital case.
Well, are you saying they are essentially recused?
Judge, we believe that it is a form of recusal, but whether it's a
you've got a bunch of guys over there who were recused under the strict rules of recusal because of conflicts.
Yes.
And then you've got another bunch of guys over there who just didn't want to do it. And that's two different things. So where does that leave you?
Well, Judge, I think there are any number of cases where judges arrive into the court. We cited the Ballul decision out of the D.C. Circuit where three judges were appointed by President Obama in 2013, and they declined to participate in that en banc decision. And once that
But isn't that left to the discretion of the judge?
It should be, Judge, and here it was not left to the discretion of the judge. At Joint Appendix 4,000...
In what way was it not?
At Joint Appendix 4,123, you have direct intervention in this court by the Judge Advocate General of the Air Force. He designates Senior Judge Helgett as Chief Judge for the court of for that panel. And so he had exercised his discretion not to participate in this case. And the memorandum designates him as Chief Appellate Judge in United States versus Witt Recon. Now, you will note at that point, no court had determined there was going to be a recon in Senior Airman Witt's case. And given the gravity of the situation and the holding...
Are you insinuating that there was monkey business behind the scenes doesn't appear in the record?
Judge, this is in the record.
This appears in the record. The designation's in the record. But you seem to be implying some sort of sneaky conduct beyond simply designating Helga.
Well, Judge...
What are you saying?
And Chief Judge, I see my time is expired.
Answer the question.
If I may respond. What we're saying is United States versus Robertson affirmed a panel change in that case, Judge, because the record was devoid of anything that suggests or smacks of command influence. And in this case...
Smacks of what?
Of command influence, okay. Judge. And in this case, you have the Judge Advocate General coming in on 18 October saying that there is going to be recon in this case, appointing a judge, and I invite you to look at this document, appointing a judge who had exercised his discretion not to participate in this case. He passes over Judge Harney, who joined in the majority opinion below. He passes over Judge Marksteiner, who joined in the dissent. Lieutenant Colonel Jeremy Weber was signed government pleadings in this case, and so there's an NA that appears next to his name. But Judge Saragossa, who authored the majority opinion, is not presented to the Judge Advocate General as an option. And so the Judge Advocate General had the option to not alter this composition. He could have easily inserted Judges Harney or Marksteiner, dissent or majority, as the chief judge. No need to insert a chief judge whatsoever, by the way. But instead he inserts a judge who's exercised his discretion.
Counsel, I have two questions for you before you sit down. The first one has to do with the fact that the five judges that we're talking about didn't participate in the oral argument. And it seems to me, just from my experience in appellate courts, that when an individual has not participated in an oral argument, that they don't participate in the decision. The remedy to that is to hold a new hearing with them participating. Is that an aspect of this case that's important, or is that something that we shouldn't look at?
Well, Judge, this is I don't think that situation, because these judges couldn't have participated in oral argument, which occurred on October 11, 2013, because they weren't judges.
Right. That's what I mean. I mean, and normally, if a judge in that case gets later added to a court, and there's a request for an en banc hearing, what they do is they go back and they re-argue it.
Yes, Judge, but those judges declined to participate in this case. They exercised their discretion not to participate, and so the decision was issued by 5-2. Additionally, there was a second argument before the second panel, and it's our position that Article 66 was never intended to allow co-equal divisions within the Court of Appeals to second-guess.
I have one more question. If we do decide that the CCA cannot en banc rehear an en banc decision, what is the status of the case at that point? What happens then?
I believe in accordance with Chilcott, Wheeler, Coleman, and Mays versus Army Court of Military Review, this court remands the case to the CCA to vacate the second decision and reinstate the first decision, Judge. That's the short answer.
And then subsequent appeals can come from that first decision.
Well, Judge, that's going to depend on what this court rules in the Williams case as to the time limits, the certification period of 60 days. because it could be that the government forfeited its 60-day certification window to pursue this unauthorized appeal.
So that is possibly an issue for another day.
That is an issue for another day, Judge.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Court will now hear from the government.
Please, the Court. I'm Roger Bruce. Major Neal and I have the privilege of representing the United States in this case.
Would you speak up, Counsel?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm sorry. The United States respectfully asserts that the specified issues must be resolved in favor of the government. Whether one was a panel decision or an en banc decision, the CCA's reconsideration was conducted pursuant to statutory authority, inherent authority, and precedent. There are many reasons for reaching this conclusion. First,
but which statute authorizes that?
Your Honor, that would be under both 66A and 66F.
Could you point to the language where they could reconsider an en banc decision in that statute? It's not there, is it?
It's authorized in that both 66A and 66F authorize the combined TJAGs to promulgate rules. And one rule of procedure expressly permits en banc reconsideration.
Okay, then that's not statutory. That's a rule.
Well, but that authority comes from Congress. Congress said to the CCA, you have that authority, go promulgate your rules, and they did so, Your Honor.
Okay. And that gives them the authority to expand what is said in the article? I mean, it seems to me that they obviously have the authority to set their own rules, but can they go beyond what the code says?
Well, Your Honor, this court concluded so in the Henderson case, because in Henderson, that was a panel reconsideration of a panel decision. And you won't find those words in Article 66A as well. However, the rules promulgated pursuant to Article 66F clearly provide a rule that permits that to occur. So using that by analogy, then if a panel can reconsider a panel decision, then certainly an en banc court can reconsider an en banc decision as provided by the rule.
Let's assume that what you say is correct. Right? Don't you think then that to the extent that this is rule-driven based on
yes, Your Honor, I would agree with that.
So the basis for a reconsideration of any panel, whether it be a panel decision or an en banc decision, are pretty narrowly tailored and circumscribed, don't you think?
They're not circumscribed in the rules, Your Honor.
Well, yes, they are. I mean, the rule specifically, whenever you don't like the decision of the first panel.
No, Your Honor.
You can seek reconsideration and hope you get a different decision, right?
No, Your Honor. That's correct.
Facts that were overlooked, a change in the law, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, Your Honor. I stand corrected.
And I'll ask you the same question that I asked the appellant's counsel, which is where in WIT 2 does it explain any of those things or what it is reconsidered?
Well, Your Honor, I think
what the lacuna was in WIT 1 that it's filling in other than it's reaching a different result.
Your Honor, I don't think they expressly said in WIT 2, this is the problem with WIT 1. Okay. They did not explain that.
Where in the government's motion for a petition for reconsideration of the en banc decision does it identify one of the bases set forth in your rules for reconsideration?
Your Honor, our position was and remains that in WIT 1 they misapplied law concerning ineffective assistance of counsel, primarily as to prejudice. That was our big argument. Regardless of the performance of the defense counsel, there was indeed no prejudice to the appellant. And that is a position that in WIT 2 the majority agreed with us.
Well, why didn't the government simply appeal WIT 1 to this court? Isn't that the normal way, the process, that when you don't agree with a CCA opinion, you bring it up here?
Well, no, Your Honor. With respect, the normal process is before we TJX certify a case, we're going to give the lower court an opportunity to correct their own errors. We
think. And does that happen every time you certify an issue to this court?
I can't swear to it, but I'm pretty darn certain that that is indeed the case, that we seek recon before we ever seek TJAG certification. In fairness to the CCA, it gives them a chance to correct their own error. It promotes judicial economy, and we don't have to come to this court or to our TJAG before we
Well, did the petition for reconsideration cite the IAC and prejudice?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
It cited.
Absolutely.
That it said, court, reconsider Witt 1 on the basis that you misapplied, that there's no prejudice growing out of the admitted IAC.
Absolutely. That was specifically raised with regard to the deputy sheriff's testimony, the bump on the head.
Raised where?
In our reconsideration, which was like 56 pages long, Your Honor. We went into great detail in our reconsideration, specifically attacking that principle in great detail.
Here's the thing. We get petitions for reconsideration quite often, right?
And, yes, Your Honor.
What happens is they basically say, you should reconsider this because you're wrong. Right? And so it seemed, and we all say, you know, well, I'm not going to say all say, but I've never, since I've been on the court, even when I was in the dissent, right, voted to reconsider on the fact that, you know, the person thinks that the other colleagues were wrong. Right?
Yes, Your Honor.
They got it wrong.
Yes, Your Honor.
I thought they got it wrong. That's what you did in this case. You said reconsider it because you got it wrong.
Your Honor, I disagree.
And then, okay, and I'm not suggesting that there was monkey business going on behind the scenery, though there may or may not have been, but it sure looks bad. Yeah. When you take judges that did not participate in one panel, elevate one of them to be the chief judge, and the case comes out the other way. I mean, it looks terrible.
And bring a judge back from retirement who had declined to participate in the oral argument.
The optics are appalling.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree with the premise of your question. This was not a pro forma request for reconsideration. We didn't go on for 56 pages and say, we disagree, please reconsider. We did much more than that. We gave a detailed analysis for why Witt 1 was wrong. This was not...
People do all the time. And what we always say is, unless you can point to a fact that we overlooked, right, or a change in the law, or law that was completely missed, right...
Yes, Your Honor. And that's what we did. That's what we did in our reconsideration.
Didn't you say that you disagree with how they applied Strickland?
Your Honor, I disagree with you. We did not submit a pro forma request for reconsideration.
I'm not calling it pro forma.
I don't think Judge Ryan is saying that. But don't you agree that this looks absolutely atrocious in the context of capital litigation? Honor, I'm not asking you whether you're right. I'm asking you, don't you think this just looks awful?
The Judge Advocate General had to appoint a senior judge to serve as the chief judge.
Well, and he skidded over a bunch that had sat and plucked somebody who hadn't.
He appointed a senior judge who was actually a former member of the court when Witt was being litigated.
I'm not questioning his qualifications. I'm talking about the optics of this. This looks atrocious.
Your Honor, I don't believe there is even the appearance of unlawful command influence here.
Counsel, in regard to a response that you gave to the Chief Judge about virtually in all cases the government files a petition for reconsideration.
Yes, Your Honor.
Does the TJAG also make reference, as was pointed out by Appellant's Counsel, talking about TJAG expects the judges in this court to use their experience over 20 years and talking about the investiture ceremony and so forth?
Does he make that?
Yes. I'm asking, in these other cases, does TJAG make reference to those type of things that could be perceived as a dog whistle about what should be happening in a case?
During the certification process?
In terms of seeking reconsideration.
I can't recall that, Your Honor, no.
Okay. Thank you.
But where was Judge Soibel during this period?
He was, at that point, still serving on the
court. He was on the court?
That is correct.
Okay.
And that was only much later that was no longer the case, Your Honor.
But he did not participate in any of this?
No, he did not, Your Honor. He did not.
But he was a sitting judge?
He was. He was, Your Honor.
Counsel, what harm would it do to the system of justice that we serve if we held that if you elect not to participate in a case that is an irrevocable decision. You can't, you either participate or you don't participate. And once you decide not to participate, all feet is aim. What harm would that do to the system? Wouldn't that strengthen the system? Well, get rid of Judge Stuckey's optical question?
Your Honor, I think that their decision not to participate created a quorum problem for the CCA. They did not have a quorum in WIT 1. Based on the 10 judges that were present and only 5 participating, they created a quorum problem under their own rule, Your Honor. Well, Your Honor,
I'm familiar with two things that judges do, right, which is they either sit out a case, right, or they recuse themselves. Right, those are the two things that judges do.
Yes, Your Honor.
So they didn't sit on the case, right? They said that they declined to sit on the case. I'm talking about Whit 1. Why shouldn't we treat that as a recusal, since those are the two things judges do, which is sit or recuse, and that they did not explain or do anything as to why they unrecused themselves, and why should we say they can't do that?
Well, Your Honor, they are appointed to the
court. Because it does look terrible.
They were appointed to the court, the most important case in the Air Force in decades, and they chose not to participate. And in doing so, they created a quorum problem that invalidated WIT 1.
Why didn't you bring that to the their attention at the time? Why didn't you bring a motion to the
court? We did, Your Honor. That was our motion to vacate. We precisely did that,
motion,
and we argued the quorum.
No. Motion, counsel, after you lost.
I'm talking about when the court sat at that time.
You didn't bring it when you saw that you were arguing to 5 people. You brought it after you lost.
After it came to our attention that we had 5 judges sitting on the
side. Well, you saw.
They weren't present during the oral argument. They weren't present. They weren't assigned to the court at the time.
No, wait a minute.
There was no way we could have.
How many judges sat in the oral argument hearing?
5, Your Honor.
Okay, so at that point, you should have known there were 5 judges on it.
We did,
Your Honor. No more than 5.
And at that point, you should have known that this objection that you have was right.
Your Honor.
It didn't ripen later. It ripened the moment they walked into the courtroom.
The recused judges also were not in the courtroom, but they had not yet publicly.
Well, but there were recused judges, and there were judges who didn't want to. Exactly. And you know about the judges who didn't want to, and you lodged no objection. You argued the case in front of 5 judges, and only after you lost did you decide that there's a horrible quorum problem here.
They weren't, Your Honor, they weren't present at the time of the oral argument. It is our
position.
Well,
I know that's obvious, but what's the point of saying that?
Well, you see,
talking about a quorum problem, right? Like, where in the rules or in the statute does it talk about what's a quorum for reconsideration? I mean, nowhere. I mean, it could be the case, and it has been the case on other circuits, where a bunch of people have to recuse themselves or do recuse themselves. And it's not a quorum problem, it's just a smaller en banc panel.
The quorum problem. Quorum rules apply to all business of the CCA, not just reconsideration. It applies to any en banc proceeding of the court, not just the reconsideration aspect.
By quorum, are you talking about the provision that says that that an en banc has to have everybody who's not recused?
No, it says that there must be a majority of the judges present.
Okay, majority of judges present.
Exactly, and that
to constitute what?
To constitute a legally permissible en banc.
Okay, yeah, constitute an en banc.
Correct.
Okay.
So if there's 5 judges present in an en banc proceeding, 3 judges will be the majority.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. But, in fact, there were 10 from the United States position. We did not learn that. We did not learn the full composition of the court until they issued their decision, just like in WIT 2. That's when we
the TJAG is running around designating chief judges. He appoints the judges, and the government didn't know who was on the court. I mean, I'm asking. You've lost me there. What happened here?
Well, Your Honor, I see that my time is running
out. You can respond to the question.
Can you repeat your question, Your Honor?
Well, I thought you were arguing that we didn't really know who was on the court. The TJAG appoints the judges. He later designates one of them as the chief judge pro tem for this thing, how did you not know who was on the court?
Well, Your Honor, it's our position then that we did not realize that we had a
quorum. You did not realize
that the court had a quorum problem.
Okay, that's another matter. Okay, never mind.
Can we go back to my question? Why shouldn't we treat the decision not to participate as a de facto recusal, which is, as Judge Cox suggested, generally irrevocable? I mean, you can't recuse yourself and then unrecuse yourself.
We do not believe choosing not to participate is a recusal. We disagree with our opponent.
If you go to the professional rules from the ABA for judges, like your options are to participate, which is what you generally should do, or to recuse yourself.
And in fact, there were judges who recused themselves. This is
but
an entirely different category.
They've done some other thing, right? And the one thing we can be certain is we can't call it participating because they didn't participate. So the only other thing to call it is recusal.
I disagree, Your Honor. They were not recused.
Well, they
were not recused.
Why can't you say they recused themselves because they didn't feel they were adequately prepared?
Well, Your Honor, let's talk about the Curtis case then for a moment. Because in Curtis, the CCA did exactly what this court did in Curtis. Curtis, this court affirmed the death penalty. All five judges participated in the oral argument. And unfortunately, Judge Wiss passed on before he could vote on the case. 3-1, the court voted to uphold the death sentence in Curtis. Then a new judge is appointed to the court. The appellant files for reconsideration, and this court grants reconsideration because, with all due respect, derogatory by this, but that Judge Cox changed his vote. So we went from 3-2 while there was a change in composition. What the CCA did here is no different than what this court did.
But isn't the CCA and this court fundamentally different in how they are appointed?
I would argue, Your Honor, that the CCA has more express authority than this court does. If you look at Article 67, you will not find the words reconsideration in it anywhere. And yet, there's a perfect analog here.
Our judges get nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate, and we have nothing to do with the TJAG, and he has nothing to do with deciding who sits on this court. So that's one thing. Second, I would say that there's quite a bit of difference of the composition changing because someone died as opposed to people changing their minds. Right? And thirdly, there's a difference between putting a death penalty back on the table and taking one off.
Your Honor, this court reached an opposite conclusion in the Flowers case. Where in Flowers, none of the original judges participated in the en banc reconsideration because one had died, one had got a new job, and one was absent. And yet this court found no significance whatsoever in that complete change in composition in the Flowers case, which was also a murder case. Moreover, Article 66F and Article 67B2 are basically one and the same. In 66F, Congress gave the CCAs the authority to promulgate their own rules. In 66B2, Congress gave this court the authority to promulgate its own rules. Yet, again, there's nothing in 67 that gives you authority to conduct any reconsideration whatsoever. I'm not here to say you can't conduct reconsideration. I'm here to say that the CCA has even more express authority, but both rules from Congress permit an appellate court to promulgate its own rules. You're not going to have Congress.
We're past that part of the discussion, right? We're just not discussing that now. I think what we're all discussing is whether you can or can't, assuming that you can, right, reconsider an en banc decision. Our question for you is, don't the people that chose not to participate in the first decision effectively recusing themselves,
no, Your
Honor, they precluded from being joined in the panel?
I will say no, Your Honor. It is our position they had an obligation to participate in a case that the court ordered to be heard en banc. They had a duty to participate,
well,
and they said they chose not to.
The judicial canon says
they're stuck, and you're stuck.
Go ahead.
They're not
the judicial canons say you have a duty to sit unless you are conflicted out.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Right. Okay.
And there was no conflict. There is.
Well, then didn't
no
they have
conflict.
A duty to sit the first time?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Didn't they have a duty to sit the first time, which they blew off?
They did, Your Honor. I agree with that.
Counsel, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked the appellant earlier. If we were to decide that CCA cannot en banc reconsider the earlier en banc decision, does that then, in your view, reinstate the first en banc decision of the CCA?
Well, it's an interesting question because all five judges of Witt 1 are gone. I don't know who you'd be returning the case to.
Well, no, I'm... Does it return it to the first opinion?
I'm not sure.
I don't okay. know. All right. Okay. Thank you very much.
I have one more question.
Yes, go ahead.
This is a more... The rules promulgated for the CCAs require that at least one... it's the traditional reconsideration rule that applies in the Senate and everywhere else. You got to have a member of the majority vote for reconsideration. That's why the majority leader always votes the other way, so he can bring it up again.
Yes, Your Honor.
We don't know who voted here.
Oh, we do, Your Honor. We absolutely do. We know that Judge Harney changed her vote. She was in the majority.
The appellant asked for an accounting of who voted
for reconsideration.
For reconsideration. The government fought that, and why would the government care?
Governor, if you look in the bound volume of the Military Justice Reporter, you will find Judge Harney's name in the majority that set aside the death sentence.
No. On the vote for reconsideration.
I'm not talking about who voted on the merits. I'm talking about who voted for reconsideration. We don't know that, and the government fought disclosing it. Well, why should the government care?
Because there's a secret deliberative process that you would expect to be honored in any appellate body. We don't believe that any of the parties should be piercing that privileged process. That's why we opposed it.
Deliberative process combined with a meandering panel composition, you can understand a concern for some transparency.
Well, it is our position that Judge Harney changed her vote, and we don't think it's an unreasonable supposition to believe that she, in fact, was the one who voted for reconsideration. It would seem unlikely she would vote against reconsideration, but then turn around and say, oh, I've changed my mind, I'm going to uphold the death penalty.
Well, why not? I mean, voting for reconsideration doesn't mean you're reaching the same result on the merits. You're just saying they're just going to be reheard.
We think it's a reasonable interpretation of her position.
Consul, I see your time has expired. Would you like to briefly conclude?
Yes, Your Honor. There isn't one set of rules for reconsideration for the government and another set for the appellants. That is why this appellant, the same counsel that are before you today, conceded such authority when they filed the exact same request before the CCA after Witt 2. And that is why appellant raised 65 issues to this court, but did not and could not raise these specified issues. Finally, it might be convenient if a prevailing party before a CCA, if they could hold justice hostage to situations where judges get new assignments, retire, or die. But the law does not require a system of justice to grind to a halt when appellate judges move on. These specified issues should be decided in favor of the United States because the CCA acted with statutory, inherent, and precedential authority, and we should now move forward with a debate about the substantive issues in this case.
Thank you, Counsel. The court will now hear from the appellant in rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge. Just a few brief points that the court touched on. We won't know if Judge Harney participated in the vote precisely for the discussion that took place moments ago. But that vote also takes place after that October 18th memorandum. The October 18th TJAG memorandum comes out, and that's a Friday, you'll recall. It's the following Monday that the decision is vacated. So over the weekend, the judges of this court decided that they were going to vacate the decision, and including judges who had felt that they didn't have apparently sufficient time to participate. The optics are appalling in this case. This looks like military justice that any Marine on his way to Tarawa would have recognized instantly. With respect to Curtis, it was a four-judge opinion. Judge Wiss tragically died on the bench, and so the court went after oral argument. He proceeded, but it was a four-judge opinion. And that is the one example in military justice where a judge of this court, the very reason of which was to insulate from command control of military authority, exercised the extraordinary discretion to not proceed what would have effectively been sending a man to a death sentence on what was ultimately an evenly divided court. Had Judge Efron not done that, Ronnie Curtis would have gone to would have been his case would have been finished filed with a death sentence.
That procedure in Curtis was consistent with Judge Everett's memorandum and I can't remember exactly the name of the
Pomano judge.
Pomano, yeah. When,
yep. Yes, Your Honor.
You had a majority of the court vote to reconsider.
Yes, Judge.
Even in that case, a majority who were in the majority.
Yes, Your Honor. And so, you can go layer upon layer of distinguishing.
Judge Everett said he would sit if both judges agreed to reconsider.
Yes, Your Honor. And so you can go layer upon layer of distinguishing that one example, the distinction between the courts, however you want to do it, as really providing no weight for the government. With respect to the quorum rule, my friend says that the quorum rule 4B states that judges who are present must participate. It's not what the quorum rule says. It says a majority of judges participating in the decision. You'll recognize that language because that's the language that the five judges used in Witt 1. It's the language that Chief Judge Allred used in Witt 2. I would also disagree that Judge Advocate General had to take action to appoint Senior Judge Harney. Senior Judge Harney was a senior judge. There was no need to appoint a second senior judge to this panel, nor was there a need to appoint a chief judge to this panel. The court was sitting on bonk, not the Walker case, which came before this court. It was where this court held that there was a need to appoint a chief judge to do panel assignments, the chief judge's only statutory responsibility, in a case that was 4 years away from direct review, and in which Captain Clive Villamez was the only remaining judge of that panel, and Colonel Charles Dorman, the chief judge, had been recused for having served on appellate government counsel multiple times. With respect to the Flowers case, as the government notes, what the Flowers case states is it's not concerning, it's unusual that none of the judges who sat on the panel but do not find that to be of decisional concern. And the reason for that is if you go and look at the Navy Marine Corps court's decision, it was a 2-1 panel split. When the court became en banc, 8 judges joined that panel. And so it wasn't of decisional concern because there was no way that the 2 judges that were being overruled by the en banc court could possibly have been of decisional concern, which is the language that the court uses. Judge Erdman, to your question, Judge Soibel leaves the CCA on 18 October, which is the same day that the Judge Advocate General's memorandum comes out.
I have a question. Can you respond to Judge Cox's earlier question is, why couldn't we or why shouldn't we simply rule that not to participate in Whip 1 de facto recuse themselves, and that once you're recused, you can't participate.
And that is our position, Judge. And for the reasons that Judge Everett cited in the Fumano, Judge Everett cited the Woodbury versus Dorman case out of the Supreme Court of Minnesota, where the court said, it would appear, in our opinion, to be a violation of proprieties in the administration of justice, which is the duty of a court to maintain, which would tend to destroy that respect for and confidence in judicial tribunals, the loss of which every good citizen would deplore. And that's precisely what we're dealing with the judiciary. It's the same standard for unlawful influence.
It's not practical in the military justice system to require that all people that participated in a CCA decision 1 also participate in the decision 2 because they may have retired, they may have been reassigned, they may become conflicted.
Judge, I see that my time has expired.
Please respond.
Judge, we're dealing with, if reconsideration is treated as it should be treated, where we're looking for a clear error of law, I think this is a very rare problem that should rarely present itself. If reconsideration is just merely asking for a pro forma do-over with a decision defense or government is not happy with, then there are presumptive problems. But at the end of the day, in this case, this simply should not be how a death penalty is reconsidered in the 21st century. Thank you.
Thank you. The court thanks both counsel. This portion of the case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.
They got the chair.